You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Stasekel, joined as always by my friend and colleague Paul Tenorio. Paul, I'm back doing the intro this week. I just realized that we've reverted to our normal roles. How do you feel about it?
I feel good as I maintained last week. You are the host of this show, and you know, you drive this thing forward. I'm just holding on to the bumper on a skateboard, you know?
The bumper on a skateboard. That sounds painful. I wouldn't want to be in that position. I'm excited for today's show. We got some good kind of allocation disorder topics. I might yell a little bit. Not really sure. We're going to see where it goes.
I feel like it's going to get spicy. That's what it feels like.
Yes. This first topic might not be the spiciest, though. I don't know. Maybe it will be. We'll see what happens. DC United made the big move of this week in Major League Soccer. They hired Wayne Rooney. He's back. After a few years away, he, of course, played for the club in 2018 and 2019, then bailed 1.5 years into a 3-year contract. He has been hired as head coach following the club's 7-0 disastrous tied for MLS worst defeat at Philadelphia last Friday. He was appointed earlier in the week. News broken by our colleague and buddy Pablo Maurer, who has written a couple of good articles about the subject already. Paul, this wasn't a complete shock. It wasn't totally out of the blue. Rooney obviously has connections with DC, as mentioned, good relationship with club ownership there, sort of rumored as a candidate. But I think, you know, when I saw the news, I was a little bit surprised that he's not staying in England. What do you make of the move from his perspective? And more importantly, what do you make of it from a DC United standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit surprised as well, just because I feel like we've seen people like Wayne Rooney. I guess the best way to put it is former players of a high-profile nature, when they're successful in the championship, getting a job, a bigger job after that. And, you know, a lot of people praised Wayne Rooney for what he did at Derby last season to keep them in the hunt despite all of the issues that they were having, the points reductions and all of that. And so I kind of expected him to get another job. I thought I saw his name floated when Everton had a job opening. That didn't end up happening. I'm not totally surprised, though, that he's back at DC. You know, I think that they did a good job of maintaining that relationship, the owners. And I think Rooney enjoyed his time with DC United as a player. I think there's something to be said for being out of Europe when you're a person with the profile of Wayne Rooney. He's such a high profile person with the tabloids and everything going on with the Agatha Christie trial and everything like that with his wife, Colleen Rooney. You know, I think there's a little bit of that to factor in here as well. You know, I'm interested to see, you know, what Rooney can make out of this. Like, is he the manager that we saw last season when he did well to keep the group together despite everything going on around them? The year before that, when he first took over, the results weren't great. So like, what are we going to get? I think we're still learning who Rooney is as a manager. And, you know, I think he knows that about himself too. And he's seen some of the managers who have come in and been able to develop themselves, have a little bit more ownership support to go to work through your problems, depending on where you are. And he probably feels that he'll have that with DC and maybe wouldn't have that with other jobs that are out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he mentioned that basically to a degree that this is sort of a developmental job for him. He turned down Everton, the chance to pursue that opportunity that ended up going to Frank Lampard. And part of the reason he's taking this job is because he feels like he needs more seasoning before he gets to that level, right? He's using MLS as a developmental league like many players are and do. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that from his perspective or from DC's perspective. But I think it's fair to wonder what kind of coach he's going to be. You know, you mentioned kind of the narrative around him. It's largely positive. despite the struggles that they had at Derby because of the off-the-field issues. Going into administration, they had a 21-point deduction because of that last year, which pretty much doomed them right off of the bat. Having said that, you know, they finished with 34 points on the season after that 21-point deduction. So they would have had 53 had their record just been allowed to stand. That would have been 18th in the league. So it's not like they were necessarily setting the world on fire. I believe that's with a kind of mid-table wage bill, at least at the start of the season anyway, as well. So yeah, he had to navigate some difficult circumstances. I'm curious what this means for DC United. Paul, we've talked about DC United on this show before. I have, you know, gotten fired up about DC United on this show before. And, you know, Dave Casper, the GM, he gave some quotes kind of basically saying that they need to go out and sign some players and that maybe that they don't have enough pieces when, you know, just a few months ago when they were firing Hernan Losada, they said that they thought this was a playoff caliber team. And it's like, okay, well, what changed? You know, they don't not spend money. I think they're 17th or something in the payroll rankings that were released by the MLSPA earlier in the year. You know, Edison Flores obviously was a player that cost a lot of money before he got shipped out earlier, just a few weeks ago. Rooney is costing a decent amount of money for a head coach, a lot more than they've ever paid for one in the past. So it's not like they don't spend, but there just hasn't been, I think I would say, the level of follow through either on the roster or, you know, with the stadium, although that sounds like it'll be changing. They're going to be building a roof, which is good at Audi Fields, covering the seats, finishing roof. Yeah. But that's the point, right? There hasn't been the level of follow through. And now they're saying, okay, well, Rooney's here. We're going to go out and we're going to sign some players. They've been linked to Jesse Lingard already here today as we record on Thursday. But it's like, okay, are you going to actually follow through? Is this the time that DC United doesn't just do the one thing, the sign Wayne Rooney, the sign Flores, but they actually follow through and try and build something a little bit more sustainable? Maybe, but I'm still skeptical. I'm not going to believe that one until I see it.
Well, that's the thing. There has to be a prove it point. And like sometimes that one shiny thing can be exciting. Like when they signed Rooney and they already had Lucho Acosta and those two worked together really well, and that was exciting for a while. They had some really cool results, and everyone's going to remember that moment with Rooney. Where he raced back against Orlando City and made the tackle and played that long diagonal, and Acosta scored and the crowd went crazy. And that's the closest we've been to what DC United was, as I said a few episodes ago when Pablo Maurer was on. But it does feel like that's kind of a pattern for DC. It's like make one big signing, point to it to say, look, we do have ambition, but don't never really doubt the rest. And never really feel like there was anything building towards something sustainable or creating a culture. Like, again, it kind of goes back to that thing of like, who are you? Who do you want to be as a club? I think that does matter. I think the best clubs in MLS have that. You know, we know
they have the clear idea.
Yeah, we know who the centers are. The Timbers have their identity for sure. LAFC under Bob Bradley, we knew exactly who that team was, and we're finding out who they are now under Trundolo. I mean, you can start to see kind of what the ideas are behind it. And I think that's what DC United's lacked. And I think also what's kind of the thing I'll say about Rooney that kind of makes me excited is, you know, when you talk to people about Wayne Rooney, when you read about him, you know, his understanding of the game is very high level, and his feel for talent. And I think that he'll have that same motivation, that same idea, like we need to decide who we want to be, sign players that fit that instead of just looking for a name. I hope so, at least. I actually think Wayne Rooney can be a good hire for DC United. Now, the downside of hires like this is that if it works out, he won't be there for long.
Yeah, but that's okay, man. I think, honestly.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've seen it before, right? I think NYCFC is probably the best example. Like when you have a manager who's successful, they're going to move on. If you can create,
we've seen it with Tata Martino in Atlanta as well.
Well, that's the thing.
If you create the
identity, then the next manager should be able to come in and build on that. And I think what happened was Atlanta, when Tata left, they had this identity. A lot of it was built around Tata. And instead of embracing that, they tried to get away from it. like immediately. They didn't want it to be about Tata anymore.
And
they,
well, it wasn't a club identity. It was a coach identity. And right. It needs to be bigger than any one individual.
Well, they wanted it to be a coach identity. You know, they didn't want, they wanted it to be, oh, we're Atlanta United. You know, we didn't need Tata. And like that backfired pretty big. So,
well, they could have co-opted his identity and made it the club's identity. Right. You know, it was there for them to do so. Right. They decided not to.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves to the post-Rooney era. I think Wayne Rooney can be good for DC United. I do think he's a name that will continue to resonate in the DC market because people remember him from his time there and they remember good things about him. They certainly know him as a star and, you know, DC needs all the help they can get in that sense. They need people that make it interesting to watch DC United.
Yeah. I think it is interesting too. Pablo pointed this out in one of his pieces that he's written that Rooney pushed when he was a player at DC United for the club to go out and spend a little bit more and be a little bit more ambitious. I would assume that will only occur more in his role as manager. So I'm curious to see if they go out and they do try and spend more and they do try and level up and they do try and make this a sustainable thing. But I want to see that follow through with DC. Paul, one other thing on this hire that I think is, you know, it's delicate, but it's really important is his family situation. And he was asked about this in the press conference and he addressed it. But, you know, we learned in that Agatha Christie trial and it had been reported previously, but we got it on the record in the court documents that part of the reason, a big part of the reason he left DC United early was because his wife and their four kids were not having a good time in the US at all. They are not coming to the US to live. They're going to stay in England. I think their oldest is high school age and he's involved in playing soccer over there. So they don't want to disrupt their life, and more power to them. Of course, that's a totally fine choice for them to make, but that is going to be a difficult thing. So I'm curious to see, you know, we've seen it happen before where Rooney left DC United in part for family reasons. So we'll see if that plays a role this time around. It's going to be hard, I think. He said, you know, from a family point of view, they understand and it's not a problem. But it is going to be difficult, I would assume, for them.
Yeah. I mean, it's always, it's a different thing that a celebrity faces that has a different type of budget. As a parent, like going on 2-week trips for work away from your kids is hard. Living on a different continent than them will be difficult on both sides. And he's not, you know, he's doing what he did last time. He's not living in DC. He's living out in the burbs. This time he's moving all the way out to Loudoun County. Not a lot of action.
Although apparently he's talking about rooming with some players. So
be an interesting dynamic.
Which player you think on DC United would be best roommate for Wayne Rooney? Most entertaining roommate. If we're going to do real world DCU,
it's Bill Hamid. There's no question that that's a no brainer.
I'm glad you went there. It is a no brainer. I mean, I would watch that show on MTV. Let's make it happen.
Wayne Rooney, Bill Hamid, Steve Birnbaum and Pablo Maurer living in a house in Loudoun County.
Yeah, there you go. Waza and the boys.
Just see what happens.
I mean, yeah, get Pablo in there too.
Yeah, you got to throw
automatic fireworks. He'll fix their cars. It'll be great.
It'll be wonderful.
Ultimately, how do you think this works out?
You know, I think that they will steady the ship this year. Maybe finish second to last instead of in last.
Wow.
Well, they're just
don't
not
go
very,
too crazy.
They're not very good. There's not a lot of time left to really make changes. I guess they could, if they have two DPs, maybe change more dramatically than that. But if they don't make big changes and they take a longer approach, I think it'll take a bit more time. But I think they'll be competitive next year. I do have faith in Rooney's ability to find good players, see good players, solicit advice in the right places, and most importantly, convince ownership to spend more and hopefully spend the right way. So I think it's going to work well.
Okay. I think that last part is the most important part of his job.
Yeah.
As of right now, I don't think we've seen any evidence that Wayne Rooney is in kind of that top 10% of coaches that make a huge difference, nor is he in the bottom 10% of coaches that make a huge difference the other way. I am of the belief that there's those two extremes and the middle 80% of coaches somewhat interchangeable and mostly dictated by the players around them. So if Wayne Rooney can kind of set a better recruitment plan and get better players into DC United and get ownership to spend a little bit more money and hopefully bring along some of the younger players, some of the academy guys that they have coming up, which is something that he did at Derby, then I think, yeah, this could be a successful project. I don't foresee them, you know, winning MLS Cup next year or the year after that, but potentially a step in the right direction for DC, which, geez, I mean, we call them one of MLS's flagship clubs, but it's been 15 years now since they've been successful. So, you know, that's sort of like calling the Fire one of MLS's flagship clubs. It's those days are long in the past. So we'll see if he can recapture some of that old magic. Paul, anything else on your hometown team? Sorry, not your hometown. Orlando's your hometown.
I agree with what you said. You know, and I talked about it, you know, I'll go back to what I said with Pablo. It's sad that DC United isn't what it was and hasn't embraced that history, but they have a chance now to kind of change course. And hopefully while they're, you know, reinventing themselves under Wayne Rooney, realize maybe embracing a bit more of the past would do well to help them as well.
Paul, you know what's not sad? GMs fighting with each other in public. More on that next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick and mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth. And with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day to day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Welcome back to Allocation Disorder. And Paul, I was sort of surprised when we were doing our pre-show kind of rundown and you wanted to lead with Wayne Rooney instead of this, because this thing is in our wheelhouse, man. And I am, of course, speaking of the war of words, the GM wars between Ernst Tanner, John Thorington about the Gareth Bale signing and insinuations, implications, drama of, you know, let's just call it what Ernst Tanner said, of cheating.
You got to make people listen to the first segment to get to the good stuff. You know, if you give them the good stuff early on, then they just
got to eat your vegetables before you get the ice cream.
That's right. That's right, Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a bit juicy. And you know what, though? It's like what everyone else says
behind the scenes. He just said it on the record. And like, there's nothing stays like in like another country anymore. Like, people don't realize that in today's world,
the internet is global.
Yeah. You might be doing an interview in German to like whatever outlet, Kicker, which doesn't even have a website. That thing will still end up on Twitter. It will still end up on Twitter. And this is great evidence of that.
And it did. So to give a little bit of background for those of you that have not followed this story, Gareth Bale, of course, signed with LAFC. I believe that was in July. It was in July, right?
Yep.
Maybe June, whatever. Doesn't matter. He signed on a targeted allocation money contract. This came as a surprise to many people because Bale was being paid $35 million, reportedly, last season by Real Madrid. TAM contract caps out around $1.7 million when you include the first half of next year and the second half of this year, which is what his deal is for. That's a pretty significant drop from 35 mil. Ernst Tanner put words to this. He told German outlet Kicker, according to Manuel Veth, who I believe works for Transfer Market, if I'm remembering correctly, he put this on Twitter. Said Tanner said, "I feel fooled, especially as they were signed," they being Bale and Chiellini, who he brought into this, "as they were signed as TAM players in the middle of the season who can only make $1.6 million. That takes some believing. Innocent until proven guilty, of course, but Bale made 35, he actually said 38 million before tax playing for Real Madrid and could have earned many times more in England than his official salary here. Why is he giving up so much? I don't think the market in Europe is that damaged." Well, there's a lot to unpack here, but before we do that, let me get to John Thorington's response. And he had one. He gave some comments to ESPN and the Voices of the Black and Gold podcast that was released earlier this week. He said, "Our integrity and how we operate as a club, we take that incredibly seriously. I personally take that incredibly seriously. Larry Friedman, as our co-president, takes that incredibly seriously. Our CFO, our owners, we take that, you guessed it, incredibly seriously. So any sort of implication that we're doing anything other than what is fully above board is a completely misguided representation and is frankly insulting. And it's disrespectful, frankly, to the player, to the club, and to the league, actually, because what you're basically saying to the league office is that you have a club that totally duped you." Tanner, for his part, said to ESPN that several parts of the various quotes were not in response to the question that is printed and was not represented in the manner I intended. I said in the interview and will reiterate again that I believe everything was done in compliance. All right, Ernst trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube on that one, I think it's fair to say. I'm not sure he really truly believes that everything was done in compliance. We can take him at his word. I would expect that he might be getting a nice little fine from MLS HQ for his comments. A league spokesperson has told ESPN as well that everything was done above board. But of course, Paul, they thought everything was done above board with Inter Miami in 2020 as well. And the point here is that if you want to hide something, you can, regardless of whether or not LAFC did so or not. If you want to, you can. And there are so many rules and so many different hoops that you have to kind of jump over that there are a lot of places to hide or a lot of incentive to hide things. I'm not saying that that's what LAFC is doing here, but I'm also not saying that to be suspicious of this or any deal in MLS is out of bounds. What do you think, man?
I will say this. The league can say what they want. All the league knows is that the contract that was filed with them complies with the rules.
Right.
Miami made that very, just like very, the one with Matuidi, very clear, right?
Yeah.
And that, here's the reality. We know this from what happened with Miami, but we also know this from doing our GM survey a little bit down the road after that Miami thing. There are payments off the books from every single team in MLS to varying degrees. Now, whether you want to say that one team cheats less than the other, so it's not as bad, it's not as egregious, you know, they're all breaking the rules. And there's no chance that the MLS headquarters can police it. Why? They don't have enough staff. They're already stretched thin as it is in the player department, being asked to do more than they can. There's no chance that they can. These are billionaire owners now in this league who have multiple businesses, in some cases, multiple clubs. There's no way that they can know what those businesses and those clubs are doing. They don't have any right to know, and they don't have the resources to do it. They can't go and hire the top forensic accounting firms and then also get the owners to agree to open their books to their other private businesses or their own personal accounts.
And by the way, all you got to do, even if you did open your books to your own private businesses and examined every little marketing deal that that every little company or every little shell or every little LLC has with different individuals, you could still just wait if you're an MLS team and a player, and then it'd be fine. Let's go back to Zlatan. This is kind of an example that gets pointed out. And Paul, you said, you know, off the top of this conversation that Ernst Tanner is just saying this on the record. And I'm writing a story on this, and that's actually the first line. It's not rare for MLS executives to trash talk in this way. It's just rare for them to say it in any way that's anything but off the record. And, you know, everyone that you talk to on this always points to Zlatan. And the $1.5 million deal that he signed initially on a TAM contract his first year, that went up a big, big amount. I think it was to $7 million. On a DP deal, a separate DP deal in year two. And he announced to Zlatan that he was leaving the LA Galaxy on November 13th, 2019. On November 27th, 2019, 2 weeks to the day after he announced he was leaving the club, it was announced that he had purchased a 50% stake in AEG Sweden. AEG, of course, is the owner of the LA Galaxy. We have no idea how much money Zlatan purchased AEG Sweden for. It could have been for the full market valuation. It could have been for a dollar. We have no idea, and we will never have any idea. But that is just one way that an MLS team could make up for a discount sweetheart deal on the front end with some additional compensation on the back. And if you did it like that, and there was no written agreement, it was just, hey, kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge situation, that wouldn't even be against league rules, I don't think.
In fact,
there are a million ways to skirt these things.
Sam, I will say, like, when all that stuff was going on with Zlatan and we were doing our reporting around Miami, there were league sources that were saying to me, again, not on the record, but on background, saying things like, well, if he did sign an agreement to purchase 50% of AEG Sweden when he was a DP, then it's not breaking any MLS rules. So it's like almost encouraging teams that if you're going to do a retroactive deal to make up for it, just make sure that that person's a DP and it all falls under the rules, right? And, yep. And the reality yep. is, like, Gareth Bale is going to be opened up to more opportunities in the LA market, and those owners of LAFC do have businesses that could be interested in Gareth Bale as a spokesperson or whatever it might be, some sort of deal, and that's the reality. And the question is, where do those rules extend to? And that gets me to my next point, Sam, which is, you know, is this a problem that MLS faces in terms of enforcement? Or is this indicative of a rule problem? And I fall very, very distinctly in the second group. These rules don't work for this league as it exists today, with these owners, with the league's place in the international market, with the aspirations of the league, with the cost of expansion, with all of these different things. There are all of these buckets that essentially create opportunity to cheat based on arbitrary numbers and outlines designed by the product strategy committee in whatever past years, varying degrees, depending on which rule we're talking about here. But these rules are being broken left and right all over the league, whether it's academy recruitment, whether it's discovery rules, whether it is paying agent fees in different ways and consulting fees, and you're cutting $150,000 check here and there off the books, whether it's using your MLS Next Pro team to get around salary rules or to get around
or your
discovery
USL team.
Rules or your USL team. And all of this is being done because it's a blaring message to the league. Everyone wants to move beyond these restrictions. Get rid of all of these buckets. Get rid of all these rules. Simplify it. Rules are still going to exist. And Sam, you say this all the time. Whenever there's a rule, there's going to be somebody trying to break that rule or get as close to that line as possible. But that doesn't mean that you can't find ways to simplify and make it so that there's not so many different places based on, again, arbitrary things that don't help the league. They really don't help the league other than help league headquarters control or have some semblance of control over who the team sign. We get into all of these scenarios and we have these discussions and they're pointless. Like is it a bad thing?
What did you just say about our lives?
Yeah, it is though. Like, is it a bad thing for Major League Soccer that LAFC signed Bale and Chiellini? Is that a bad thing from us? No, it's a bad thing if it didn't happen because they had to fit these guys under $1.6 million because that's the bucket that TAM was created under in 2015 or updated in 2017 or whatever. Like, and I'm working on a story about another rule that just needs to go away essentially, or needs to be created to incentivize people, good players, to stay in MLS. Like, this league has grown, and that is great. The rule book has not grown sufficiently to keep up with that maturation, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So a couple of things here. Before I dive into anything that you just said, I want to say that I think some of this is a feeling that is relatively common, particularly among the less glamorous and lower budget teams in Major League Soccer, that they think that the big teams get unfair treatment, that it's not an equal playing field. And I think some of that, frankly, is a little bit of sour grapes. I also do want to say, in the interest of fairness, we're not making any allegations here regarding the bail thing. And I think it's within the realm of possibility that he could have gone to Los Angeles on this deal and everything's above board. Like, he likes LA. We know he loves golf. A lot of golf courses out there. The MLS calendar is well situated for him to kind of be in good form for the World Cup in November with Wales. It's an attractive team in terms of how they play, in terms of where they are in the standings. It's a great stadium, good place to good fans to play in front of. There are a lot of reasons why Bale would want to go to Los Angeles. And that's even before accounting for the fact that he's already made hundreds of millions of dollars in his career. He doesn't really need money. Like, that might not be a motivator for him at this point. So putting that to the side, that's where the small market, big market thing comes in. And some of this is the teams in LA or the teams in New York or wherever have a little bit of a natural advantage over the teams like Philadelphia that aren't kind of as stereotypically attractive for a foreign player to come to. So that's part of it. But the other part is regarding the rules, like you just kind of laid out there. You know, part of me is a little hesitant because wherever the rules are set, people are going to be trying to push it, no matter where they're at. The problem is there are so many different places to push it in the current system. There are all these different lines all over the place. MLS can't enforce it. They don't have the ability to. And frankly, Paul, they shouldn't be spending their time or energy or money on enforcing these things. They should have other priorities. You know, there are bigger fish to fry for the league. And so why are you creating all of these buckets? I'm so sick of talking about this, man. Like, I love talking about it, but I'm so sick of talking about it because the answers are clear. You can maintain a level of competitive balance if you just switch to a floor and a ceiling. You know, there will still be parity. You have single elimination playoffs, but you don't need to do it this way. It's inefficient. There are these potential for bad actors and for cheating, and that creates all these enforcement problems, and that creates opportunity costs with other things that the league could be doing instead. And it's just so nonsensical. It's so backwards, and they just, it's not changing, and it doesn't make any sense anymore. And I don't know how many times we have to scream and yell about it on this show or in print. I mean, I guess probably a lot more because I don't think it'll change anytime soon, really. But it's frustrating, man. It's frustrating.
I think you nailed it. You have a rule book you're incapable of enforcing. You're discussing whether or not to put resources into trying to enhance enforcement, when those resources could very clearly be used in other and better ways to study the league, grow the league, improve the league. And by the way, one of those ways to improve the league is to change the rule book. The league would get better.
Yeah.
It would get better. The level
and
of
you
play,
wouldn't have to spend any more money.
The level
you
of play would get better.
More money.
And it's more efficient, and you have a lot of money already being spent by these owners. And I think more and more and more these owners are going to start saying, who are you to say I can't do X or Y or Z with my money when I've spent $500 million or hundreds of millions of dollars investing in this league? And that's the reality. You've charged these enormous expansion fees and you're putting on limitations, again, based on these arbitrary rules that were dreamed up in the product strategy committee. And they don't maximize the potential of this league anymore.
Yeah. Paul, there are some fun elements to this story. It's not all doom and gloom. And one of that is kind of the back and forth here. It's been entertaining. And we sort of got at this a little bit in the survey that we did and some of the feedback we got there from people that we surveyed even was, I can't believe you guys got all these people to say all this crap.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you should believe it because this is what these people talk about all the time, you know, and including you, person who I'm speaking to on the phone right now, you know? So I think it's certainly good content. Are you an F1 guy?
I watch the Netflix show.
Okay. So you'll probably understand where I'm going with this. I am not an F1 person and I've never seen the Netflix show, but I was talking to our buddy, Bobby Warshaw, and we were kind of texting on a group chat about this story yesterday. And he's like, more MLS GMs need to go after each other in public. Like how the F1, what do they call them? Team directors.
Yeah.
Like how the F1 team directors do. So I'm all for that. I would appreciate some more kind of public, shenanigans.
Yes.
In this way.
I mean, this is the stuff that we talk about, like what grows a sport is creating and talking about these types of things.
It's stories,
you know,
it's drama.
It's drama, it's stories, it's personalities, right? Yeah. Like Toto, yeah, the team director of Mercedes going at the Red Bull team director and vice versa, right? They are known as well as the racers from that Netflix show. And I think, you know, yeah, I think it's good. Now, it's important that they get discussed at like the higher levels and people get to know these personalities and these people and beyond just news bites, right? Like they know who they're married to.
Sure.
They know, you know, their personalities, and that all contributes. That's why that Netflix show has been so successful for F1, is you feel like you know where these people are from and what they're going through and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, it's never a bad thing when stuff like this happens. Like, I mean, I remember when I was...
I mean, because there are rivalries behind the scenes with these guys.
Yeah.
Some of these dudes do not like each other. And like, they're pretty open about it in private. Like they know that the other guy doesn't like them. The other guy knows that vice versa. So, you know, just come out, get a little snipey with
but
it.
What happens when they come out and say stuff? Like, I remember like being in Orlando when Adrian Heath went on his radio show and talked about Dom Dwyer. And then Peter Vermees got mad at Adrian Heath for talking about Dom Dwyer. And then MLS fined Adrian Heath. And then Adrian Heath wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole for the rest of the season. And I was like, you know what? That stinks that he won't just take the fine. But like, it was great while it lasted. You know, it was great.
Hey, that's his pocket though. And you know what? Full disclosure here. I called Ernst. I contacted Ernst Tanner this morning to see if he wanted to talk further about his comments. He declined to comment. I don't know why he declined to comment, but you know, I don't think it's crazy to think that he might be getting fined and that opening his mouth further on the subject would only increase that.
Hey man, if he hasn't been fined
so
yet,
maybe
get it all in.
Maybe MLS, maybe instead of fining, they should give bonuses for stuff like this. Just flip it, you know?
If they see
the
interactions,
spicier, the better.
If they see interactions on Twitter going up, if there's enough buzz on stories in the media, you get a little, it's like the PGA Tour throwing those media bonuses out there. We'll get bonuses to coaches and GMs who create like off-field
drama. Is that a thing that's
drama
happening in the PGA Tour?
Yeah, the more social media interactions you get by the end of the season, like the winner of that gets a big bonus.
Wow.
Let's see if you can
guess who
got the highest bonus of social media interactions or buzz. Who do you think it was?
Man, David Duval.
David Duval. Only one person that could ever win that award.
Tiger Woods.
Yes, it's Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, even though he didn't play barely
Shocker
at all last year. Anyways, yeah, I mean, look, this is good for the league. It's interesting. It is dramatic. It is funny.
It's real.
Yeah.
It's real. People stop being polite and they start getting real. We're ending every segment of this show with real world talk. Yeah, there we go. That's the end of the segment. Stay with us. We're just coming back. We're talking LA Galaxy.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Paul, I was watching MLS last night, and I'm sitting in front of my TV. It's like 11 p.m. on a Wednesday here on the East Coast, and I'm getting upset. Do you know why I was getting upset?
The hammock you ordered hasn't arrived yet?
Well, yeah, but besides that, no. I was getting upset because the LA Galaxy were getting their butts kicked at home to the San Jose Earthquakes. And you would say, Sam, well, why do you care? You're not an LA Galaxy fan. Well, true. That's correct. But we talked about DC United as a club of yesteryear that has fallen on hard times. But look at the LA Galaxy, man. Like it, and to be fair to them, they mounted a good fight in the second half, and they only ended up losing 3-2 at home to the San Jose Earthquakes. And they very easily could have ended up tying or maybe even winning that game. But you look at this team, you look at this roster, you look at missing the playoffs in four out of the last five seasons, you look at where they are in the standings now, where they're going to be in a dogfight, it looks like, to make them this season. You look at how much money they spend on their roster year after year after year after year, and you look at the top of the organization. And can you explain it to me? Chris Klein has been there for this entire bad run. Jovan Karofsky, the technical director, been there for this entire bad run. The coaches have switched. Dennis Teclosa, he's come in and out. But those two are the constants. Can you explain like how? I don't get it.
I mean, I think there's a simple explanation. The Galaxy had one of their worst seasons in their history, and Chris Klein got a contract extension.
A five-year contract extension.
So what does that say to you? To me, it says that they
don't care at all, that ownership doesn't care at all.
Certainly that they don't tie Chris Klein to the results in any way.
But it's not just on the field, Paul. Let's not get it twisted, man. Like over the last, what, 4.5 seasons, they have completely ceded that market to LAFC. LAFC is a sexier team. They are a better attended team. They have a better stadium. They have a better atmosphere. They are quote unquote cooler. They are signing the bigger stars now as well. I would hazard a guess that they probably do better commercially than the Galaxy, although I could be wrong about that, to be fair. I don't know. They've completely ceded the market too. So it's not just that they're struggling on the field. It's that off the field, they lost LA. And I don't see them really getting it back unless LAFC takes a nosedive. So this was a very proud organization. The Bruce Arena and David Beckham years, obviously super duper successful. Robbie Keane, they won, what, 3 out of 4 championships between 11 and 14. They were a great team, great organization, the flagship club in MLS. Bruce left, and since then they haven't had a clear direction. The thing about the Galaxy for me, Paul, is that I don't even know who's in charge half of the time. Ostensibly, it's Klein at the top. He is the president, so the buck stops with him. But over the years, right, Kurt Anolfo was hired and Peter Vahenas was promoted to GM. Anolfo was the coach. They were going to go with the youth movement. They gave that like half a season and then they fired those two. Hired Ziggy Schmid. They gave up on the youth movement and went back to the big stars. That didn't work too well. He got fired. They brought in Guillermo Barros Scalotto. They brought in Dennis Teclosa. If I'm remembering correctly, Dennis Teclosa did not hire Guillermo Barros Scalotto. I think that those two hirings were separate. That didn't work out. Now you have Greg Vanney in charge. He's obviously had a ton of success in MLS with Toronto FC, but Teclosa leaves. Karofsky is sort of elevated into GM, maybe, but maybe it's Vanney. We don't really know who's making the signings ever there. And the whole thing is muddled and obfuscated and bad. They're not a good team. And they spend more money than basically everyone else in MLS. And it's become consistent at this point. And I just don't get it. I don't get why these guys don't catch more heat.
Well, we know that this has been, as you just laid out, a problem across many, many years, across many different leaders. And one of the things that, and we've written this story, I think, three times now over the course of these years, Sam. I wrote one, then you wrote one, then I wrote one. And I think now I guess
it's my turn.
Yeah, it's your turn to write again. But like, or I just wrote the Vanney one, you know, recently about kind of what he's trying
to
do.
I'm going
to
pull that up, by the way.
And yeah. And I think that, you know, when you look at, one thing that stands out to me is when you look at the DP signings here, there's clearly not a vision for how they want to build this team. And I remember going back when Ziggy Schmid first came in, they signed Zlatan. Zlatan's a great player. You pretty much have to sign him if you can sign him, especially the fact that he
scored 52 goals in 56 regular season games, I think.
But that was done without basically consulting Ziggy, right? And like, again, to be fair, I'm not really consulting a coach if I can sign Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But
and even if you do, he's probably going to say yeah. And if he says no, you say, all right, too bad, buddy.
Right. But the problem was he had just signed another forward, Ola Kamara. You know, so like you have to be on the same page so that you don't sign two of the same type of players so that you use the money you spent on Ola Kamara somewhere else, you know. And that type of signing is indicative to me of real problems in the process and the fact that there are multiple people making significant decisions at the same time. That has been the problem at the Galaxy. No one knows who's in charge. And I don't think it's just us externally. I think there have been real issues internally with who is in charge, who's making the decisions, and who's overruling whom and when. Because the reality is that it's not just Dennis Teclosa that was making decisions when that roster was being built. And that's just the reality based on my reporting. And I think your reporting as well. And you know, part of why people got optimistic of Greg Vanney coming in is they believed that Vanney would be able to create some structure. And when I spoke with Vanney, he spoke about that. He said that being a
they didn't have a video room. They didn't have a video room, Paul.
Yeah. And he said, but even little things like he was saying, like he came in and he, as an outsider, looking in, he felt like every year they were just signing stars, signing guys, trying to put a roster together for that year. And then when they didn't make the playoffs, then the next offseason they go in and do it again and try to make it work, make these pieces work. And there was never really any vision of who are we? Who do we want to be? How are we building for the future? And that's what happens when you have multiple people making decisions, multiple people coming in, being empowered, but really not. It's difficult.
Has that changed, though? When you look at this roster now, do you think that's changed?
Well, that again goes to me. I look at DP signings with the Galaxy always because Douglas Costa, the moment that signing happened, I mean, I had somebody that was saying to me, oh, this should be probably like a Pato-like deal with Orlando. Like he comes on like $180,000 and, you know, kind of proves himself again. And he was a DP. And immediately, Michele Giannone and others were like, this is a terrible signing as a DP. I don't understand what the Galaxy were doing. And it's been bad. It's been exactly what people thought it was going to be.
Now, in the interest of fairness, Douglas Costa was dealing with some injury issues all of last year. He didn't quite look right. He says he's healthier now. Watching that game last night between them and San Jose, he came on in the second half, and he actually looked really good. By far the best he's looked for the Galaxy in a game that I've seen him. So maybe he can turn it around. But I think your broader point still exists here.
Yeah, it's just how are these decisions being made? And again, who is making the decisions? Like, is everyone on board with all of these decisions? Is there a streamlined chain of command? Is somebody empowered to think about the long term? And I keep going back to this interview with Vanny. To me, in that conversation, it felt like that was kind of the theme. Like, we are going to create something that is sustainable. That is sustainable, and it is who the Galaxy is. We talked about this in the first segment. You have to have some sort of cultural identity. This is who we are. That's what Bruce Arena is so good at. Like, if you talk about Bruce Arena as a general manager, sporting director in Major League Soccer, you know, he's always been a coach and sporting director. We know what he does with his teams. He finds guys who are very good at what they do, and he knows how to piece them together. He doesn't ask any more of them. He relies on MLS veterans to fill certain roles, and he's got clearly a pretty good eye at signing DPs to elevate those MLS players. You know, you look at New England and what he did in LA, you know, Robbie Keane, one of the best DPs of all time. And then, you know, Carlos Gil, he didn't sign, but he's certainly, I think, maximized.
Gustavo Bo, Adam Buxa, he signed.
You know, yeah. These are players who have been successful. But what stands out about Bruce is his ability to find talent in MLS and maximize that talent. And that's just his identity as a general manager. Other GMs have different ways that they build rosters and to different varying degrees of success. But that's what we knew about that Galaxy team. They were going to have stars, and they were going to maximize their MLS talent. And we haven't seen that from the Galaxy in a while. And I asked Greg Vanney, like, is this LA Galaxy team always going to be big name stars, and then you figure out how to make everything else work? And he basically was like, yes, like, the Galaxy wants their DP model to be
That's fine.
It is
fine. You can still build something sustainable that way.
For sure. But I think that's why I keep alluding to the fact that I look at the DPs and who are they signing and who is making the decisions. And if you don't have a clear process to sign these guys, but it's always a part of who you are, you're going to be in trouble. And we've seen that in the past years with Giovanni Dos Santos, with so far Douglas Costa, and it's only been a little bit of time with Kevin Cabral.
Kevin Cabral
on a 5-year contract. I mean, these are some problems that, you know, they're not alone in MLS in signing bad players. Like, they're not. But if that is
everyone,
a huge part
everyone,
of your identity.
Everyone misses from time to time.
Yeah,
everyone.
Yeah.
They miss more often than most.
Sam, let's lay it out. It's been a too many chefs in the kitchen issue in the Galaxy. There's not been clear mandates given to people enough.
And that ultimately, to me, comes down to Klein. Because he's the one that, if he's not making the decisions, he needs to empower someone to do so. And they need to come up with a clear vision together. And it doesn't seem like that has ever happened. And it's been repeated over the course of several regimes now. And so, all right, well, he's sort of the last guy standing. And I think it's important, Paul, to go back to the fact that he was hired with very little experience. And, you know, I tweeted sort of about this last night, and somebody pointed me in the direction of a podcast that Chris Klein went on a couple of years ago called The Wow Factor with Brad Formsma. And on this podcast, you know, he was just kind of talking about his journey in relatively like straightforward fashion, from his playing career to his business career and so on and so forth. And he told the story of basically how he got hired by the LA Galaxy. He, of course, played for the LA Galaxy, and he was a part of MLS union leadership, maybe even the president, when they settled the CBA around the turn of the 2010 decade. And according to him on this podcast, they finished the CBA. A couple of days later, Tim Leiwicki, who was running AEG and essentially was the, you know, he wasn't the owner of the LA Galaxy, but he was Phil Anschutz. He was his representative for ownership. He called Chris Klein and said, Chris, let's go get breakfast tomorrow. And Chris is like, I have no idea what this is going to be about. And they get to breakfast, and Leiwicki basically is like, so when do you think you're going to retire? And that's an interesting question for a player to field from his owner or owner proxy owner. And Chris was like, well, I'm not really sure. And Leiwicki said, I think it needs to be at the end of this year. And here's why. I think you're going to be a president of an MLS team one day. I wanted to be the president of my MLS team, the LA Galaxy. And the sooner you get that process started, the better it will be for you and the better it will be for us. He ended up retiring at the end of that year. He was made a vice president of the LA Galaxy. He wasn't a vice, and this is what he said on the show. He wasn't a vice president of marketing or anything like that, or sales or ticket sales or corporate partnerships or whatever. He was just a vice president. And basically he learned for a couple of years under the arm of the other LA Galaxy executives. And eventually he was elevated to president of the team. And that's his whole career path. And that is, you know, it's apparently a path that AG has followed with the Los Angeles Kings and Luke Robitaille and the NHL. So it's not like this is the only time that this has happened with them. It's happened many times, I'm sure, in many other businesses all around the world, all of the time. But that's a ridiculous way to hire somebody. I think this is sort of the epitome of what, you know, minority players and women talk about when they talk about like old boys club and white guys kind of running the show. That's not Chris Klein's fault. But the point here is that he didn't exactly have much executive or leadership experience before he got this job. And I think we've seen that sort of manifest out over the last 5, 6, 7 years since he's sort of taken over and been running the show.
Yeah. I mean, it's you said it's a ridiculous way to hire someone. I think more specifically to hire someone to be the president of an organization. It's not like, you know, again, he didn't come in and do an entry-level job and learn the business for a decade. And
right.
He came in as a VP and became the president. And yeah, when you told me the story today, earlier today, it made me think of the roundtable we did with some of the leaders of the Black Players for Change, and specifically Earl Edwards Jr. talking about, you know, kind of looking around the locker room and realizing there were these other players, usually white players, who were already creating relationships in the front office and essentially networking to have a job right when they finished and they retired. And they were like, well, why don't I, you know, he was kind of like, I need to get on this, or like, why do I feel like I don't have access to that same pathway?
Mm-hmm.
That's what stood out to me about it. But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's clear through the fact that the Galaxy have missed the playoffs for the last 5 years that whatever's happening there isn't working. The hope is that Fanny can turn it around, and on the sporting side. And to do that, he needs to be empowered. He needs to be like, if you're going to do it, then name him sporting director. If that's the plan. If not, if it's Jovan, then name him the sporting director and yeah. Let it be his plan. You know, I think, you know, I don't know whether Jovan Karofsky can be a good GM. You know, it hasn't happened yet. Like, I have like an opinion on it, but I don't know. But I do,
yeah,
I do know that the problem within that front office, according to years of interviews across different stories and different regimes, is that there has never been a feeling that someone's in charge, at least not since Bruce left. And that, yep, that has caused problems in sustainable roster build, in power struggles on the inside, in the way relationships have been handled, the way people have been made to feel who have worked at the Galaxy. And when you have that sort of culture and unrest internally, it's going to manifest into your product. And their product is a soccer team. And they've missed playoffs for the last 5 years. So, you know,
Yep. That
to me is what has to change. Give somebody the keys, give them the mandate to build something sustainable. Yes, the Galaxy need to win in the short term, but more importantly, they need to get on track so that they don't become what the Chicago Fire have become, what DC United has become, where they're mm-hmm. so far behind that what they're chasing isn't, you know, possible for multiple years. Like, the Galaxy are not that far away, in part because their owners are always willing to spend. And,
yeah.
And they have the best market, one of the best markets for talent in the country. They're in Los Angeles. They can pull talent just like LAFC just did with Bale.
And by the way, that's another part of this. Their academy has not produced much of anything.
Right. And I know
Alvarez
that
is contributing for them and all of that. But like, the fact that they haven't gotten more out of that is kind of shameful.
It is. But that is a huge focus for Vanny. And we've seen like his efforts in Toronto have paid off. But that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time.
It does take time. But they've had time.
Yeah.
Not Vanny. But as an organization, they have.
For sure. But I'm saying now that if they're really starting, if Vanny's starting to push that, it's going to take time. All I'm saying is there just needs to be a mandate. And the mandate needs to be more than just make the playoffs this year. It has to be like, you are in charge. Put together a 5-year plan. This is what we're doing to be what we were before. And they can be that. They're the Galaxy. You talk about brands that still resonate. the galaxy still resonate. I did a story that was an explainer of this Bale signing, partly because people didn't realize that LAFC was different than the Galaxy. They thought Bale was signing with the same team as Beckham had signed with.
People in Europe.
In Europe.
Yeah.
And the Galaxy still resonate. And that's a huge advantage. So they're not, they don't have to be that far off. They can be good. And that's what got you angry last night. And that's why at the end of the day, Sam, I mean, we just need to get Chris Klein and Jovan Karofsky and Douglas Costa and Kevin Cabral and Sam Stasikal into a house, you know, and just start getting real. You know, we just need to start getting real.
This wasn't real enough for you. I don't know if I want to be in that real world house. And you know what? I think we need to be fair to Kevin Cabral and not subject him to that. It's not his fault. Okay. Anyway, Paul, this was a fun episode. I enjoyed this one. Hopefully you enjoyed listening to it, listeners. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll come up with an MLS real world house for next week's show. I think that could be an interesting exercise.
Everyone who's listening to this can send us their real world, their ideal MLS real world house. And we know that.
Is the real world even on anymore?
No, I don't think it exists anymore. But Sam,
it hasn't been on for like a decade.
Imagine a real world house in which Nuhu lives with basically anyone else in MLS.
I mean, that's the house I want to be in. I will say, once upon a time, when I worked for Real Salt Lake, I created a very stupid segment of videos that we would do, and it was called the Real World. So how about that? A little peek behind the curtain. We did some really dumb stuff. It was kind of funny, though. I thought it was funny.
Which is all that matters.
Guy that laughs at all of his own jokes thought it was funny. With that, I'm Sam, laughing at my own joke again. He's Paul. This has been Allocation Disorder. Thanks for listening.